Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Hit Chat Chit Chat. I'm your co-host, Connor Reynolds. Above me, I have the lovely gentlemen, JP Fischone and Connor Burns. JP, how you doing today, sir?
Lovely, lovely. Ready to get going.
Let's go, baby. Mr. Connor Burns, how you doing today, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty fired up right now. On Mondays, with our senior academy, so we do split them up in two groups, two lifting groups, and in the middle of those we do like our mental game meetings and stuff. And today was all about like discipline and all that stuff, like kind of creating like habits and systems in place, you know, to kind of keep you on track, and as well as like kind of things to do when you're, you know, losing motivation. Especially like in Canada, it's a long off season, you know, it's going to be ebbs and flows, you know, and kind of how to combat that loss of motivation to kind of keep you on track. So, I don't know. My mind is stimulated right now.
Let's go, baby. Fired up, man. I love every second of it. Really quick. Do want to bring out some kind of cool news. Last week we had our 40th episode. And we are now over 1,000 views or 1,000 listens across all platforms on the podcast. So everybody, real quick, nice little round of applause, boys. That's pretty neat. It's awesome. Pretty cool pulling up the data, and it says 1.1K listens. I was like, oh, that's kind of neat.
Awesome.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Did you guys have anything show up at the facility? How was your guys' Thanksgiving? Like, what we got going, boys?
All right, so let's hear the mental talk. What do you got?
Well, for me, it was this Thursday. You know, not Thanksgiving up here, so my Thursday was. we really got into, you know, we kind of went around with all our guys, and it was just like, next 6 months to like a year, like what's your driver? What's your number one goal? You know, and a lot of them are like, well, I'll throw 90 off the mound. You know, hit 95 eggs of velo off the rap soda machine, stuff like that. Right. And then we kind of broke it down. Like, you know, we always talk about, we got to live life backwards. So like on our early on mental game meetings, you know, our first one we do is like, what's your why, you know? What's that driver? And our big thing is like, we want those big, hairy, audacious goals. Like, you know, why just be like, oh, I want to play college baseball. It's like, fuck that. Like, let's win a World Series. Let's be an MLB All-Star. And it's like, okay, how are you going to do that? Well, I've got to be an MLB regular. Okay, how are you going to do that? Well, I got to do XXX in the minor leagues. How are you going to do that? Get drafted. Kind of see my picture there, right? So then we kind of broke that down again on this one, where it's like, okay, you know, you want to throw 90. Okay, how are we going to do that in the next offseason, this 6 months? And kind of working with guys, breaking that down, where it's like, okay, let's say, you know, we use an example. It's like, okay, this guy's thoracic extension, not great. So, you know, when we're doing our mobility work, okay, we really got to focus on that, keeping my shoulders down and back, chest up, stuff like that. He only deadlifts like 330 off the trap bar. It's like, okay, we probably got to get that up to about 420, you know, kind of things like that. So like letting these guys know, you know, we got to work backwards and we got to go from the macro all the way down to the micro. And then as well as like kind of creating habits. Have you guys read Atomic Habits?
I've not.
So I would really recommend it. I read it back in May, and I use it in my own life, right? It's, you know, you need those big goals, but you got to go in like day to day, like, what am I going to do today? And it's about creating those habits. So, you know, when that motivation fails, we can fall back where we have a system of, well, I just have to do this, right? You know what I mean? Like I have to do this. The late Trevor Moad, if you guys know who that is, talks about it takes what it takes. You know, once you say like, I want to do this, like, this is what I'm passionate about, there's no more choice. You take the choice out of it. It's like, no, I'm going to get fucking 100 swings in today. I'm going to get 150 swings in today. I'm going to be completely locked in on my mobility routine today. You know, my catch play, I'm really going to work on my lead arm. You know what I mean? Just sit like that and really working on these guys. Like, hey, this is what it takes. Like, if you really want something, like, you take the choice out of it. You just have to do it.
I like that a lot.
You gotta do it. Everything has a price.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys use to write those things down or keep track of your guys' goals?
So a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, we had them do kind of a rough copy. And then from there, you know, like we said, we started, it's like, hey, you want to work like top of the top, work backwards. Right. And then, Taylor took a look at them, talked to them about it. It's like, hey, let's make a good copy. You know, it's your goal sheet. Like let's make it look good. You know, let's put some quotes on it.
So they're actually writing it down.
Yeah. Like I still, my brother did this with me when I was 15. Like if you see right by my towel there, like I got that goal sheet up. I still do them every single year. Cause you know, it's good, man. You gotta have a vision and like a kind of, a guiding path. Right. But, had him do that. And then now we're into the phase of like, okay, now we got to start creating like monthly goals, weekly goals, daily goals. And like the ability of just straight up writing it down. You have to write this stuff down. You know, what is his name? From Legacy, he was like he was one of the All Blacks captains, like all time All Black. He had a quote where they were looking through his like old childhood home, and they found a sheet of paper he had written on. He just said, "I'm going to be the greatest All Black of all time." And crazy, because he pretty much like became that. And he wrote it down when he was like 12. And he says, he's like, nothing's real until you write it down, right? In your head, you're like, okay, yeah, like tomorrow I'm going to be really good at my diet. And, it's kind of that leeway of like, no, maybe I can do this here and there. You write that shit down. It's like immediately like, this is a contract to myself. Like, you know, I'm going to wake up at 15 minutes before school, or 15 minutes before I need to wake up so I can meal prep a little bit. You know, I'm going to get to the gym 15 minutes earlier and I'm going to really focus on my phone. You know what I mean? Like you got to write that shit down or else it's not necessarily real. You know, you write that down immediately. It suddenly becomes like, okay, I wrote this down. Like I'm making a commitment right here. I need to do this. This is important to me.
No, I like that.
So, yeah. Argument.
Yeah. That's kind of where we're at right now.
A piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Really good for the like younger kids to start getting in their head as they kind of like enter grade 9 and like start looking towards college ball. That's huge.
One sec, let me pull this guy over. Don't want to share that, but I want to share this. So I love that. Love that, to a point where if you at all want, I can send you this, Burnsy. This is my hitter's goal sheet. So I do it on a Google form because I can't keep track of shit. So let Google to keep track of it for me. But I've essentially gone through and just wrote like, what's today's date? What is your current weight? What's your current height? What is your goal for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, and a year from now for your weight? How are you going to obtain your weight goals in those time frames? What's your max velo? What's your goal velo for 3, 6, and 12 months? I've essentially gone through and done that for exit velo, distance, launch angle, bat speed, rotational acceleration, and attack angle. And then it just has a few other things. But, like, I love that, man. I really do. And it's one of those where I was actually on Twitter, because it's one of those things where I run into it all the time. One sec. Can you see JP there, Burnsy?
Yep.
Damn it. Let me... No, I lost him. Oh, there we go. We're back. I think it's because I went live. I'll cut this piece out. But... essentially, like when going through, and I've known that kids kind of struggle with that piece of like understanding goals and stuff like that. And so, because it's one of those, like you said, like until you actually like sit down, do it, until you sit down and think about it, until you sit down and like write it out or whatever it is, it's pretty difficult to essentially one, remember those, two, obtain those, three, build a plan for those. And like you said, I think it's really good to phrase it as like it's a contract to yourself, right? And I phrase it where dreams and goals are the exact same thing, except for a goal has a plan to get there, where a dream is just like, I want to get there. Right. And so I'll go through, and when I've gone through these like goals and I'm working with kids and they're like, well, what do you mean? How am I going to do this? Or I'll look, and actually I just closed it out. But like some of the examples are like, how am I going to, you know, get my exit velocity, you know, goal is like hit the ball harder. It's like, oh, no shit. Like sick. And so like, a lot of the time, like I'll use the example of, all right, like I want to become a millionaire. My way of becoming a millionaire is I'm going to make more money. And I'll ask my kids, like, do you think that plan's going to work? And they're like, well, that's not really a plan. It's like, oh, weird. I was like, all right, so can you help me build my plan? Like, what would that look like for me? And they're like, well, maybe stop spinning. It's like, all right, let's do that for you with this. And a lot of the time I feel like kids, when they're left to their own accord, it's very monotonous, where it's like just going through and almost feels like schoolwork answering some of these things. Unless you get run into that kid that like understands and gets it from an early spot. Like I have a freshman right now where he is locked in, dialed in. His main goal is he wants to be the facility record holder for all of our numbers for underclassmen. And he was for exit velo for like 5 days. And then the kid that previously held it came in, beat it. So now his whole thing is he wants to be that record. He has his goal is 98. He's hit 96 right now, and the leader is at 96.8. So he's there, he's with it, but that's like one out of my like, you know, six freshmen that are locked in like that. Pretty much the other five, it's like, what's a goal? It's like, oh, all right. So I don't know, like JP, what do you guys use for anything like that? How do you guys use that? The goal side of things.
Yeah, a lot of our goal planning is done through track. And so they'll kind of keep track of it that way. But I think for us, like, since we don't see them as regularly, and like most of the guys are in for a month unless they're long-term trainees, I think for us it's making sure they understand that the process is really important. And like, you guys have been talking about like the long-term planning is just so critical, because it's something we run into a lot where guys come in and they kind of want to find the magic pill and kind of just be good because of some magic cue that we tell them. And it's just not how it works. And it's just not how we treat training. And so I think for them, a lot of the times it's a surprise when we're like, yeah, you're going to suck. You're probably going to suck for another week. Like, you're just going to get chewed up. So, like, you have to be okay to think long-term to be able to go, like, I know this is an investment of my time for something that I want later down the road. And if you just want a quick fix, like, it's just not what we offer.
Cole Thomas, the pitching instructor here, he got it from somebody else. I can't remember. But he talks about – we talked about it on our podcast a couple weeks ago. Some guys want a microwave success. Other guys are understanding that it's a slow marinade. It's a slow roast, slow smoke. Like, it's one of those where if you want, you know, a cheap, quick, easy thing, like, you're going to get, you know, top ramen. You're going to get cup of noodles. And out of the microwave, you know, it could be really good cup of noodles, but compared to other styles of soup or other styles of you know, food, not the greatest. You know, you're going to want that, you know, big pork roast, filet mignon, pork shoulder, whatever it is. Well, that takes time. That takes, you know, the marinating. You got to go through. You got to smoke it. It takes a couple hours. It's a lot different from that microwave success. And a lot of guys, I don't think, understand that. And to a point where one thing that I've noticed with my old man getting up there in age is that now that he understands and has had, like, really good, like, smoked food, it's not that he doesn't like the smoked food as much. He's just really enjoying the process of making it. He likes, you know, building the seasonings. He likes going out and, you know, putting all the coals together. He likes getting a preset. He likes putting it out there, putting the little thermostat in the middle, checking his phone, you know, so that way he can see that. He likes that aspect, if not more than the end result. Because the end result, I mean, you eat it, it's done in like, you know, 30, 45 minutes. But to get prepared, it takes like 8 hours. And so he's enjoying the 8 hours almost more than he's enjoying the 30 minutes it takes to eat it. And it's one of those where if we can get guys to, rather than trying to microwave their success to get to that, you know, magic number, their magic cue or whatever it is, that PR is only going to, you know, you're going to do it and it's going to be there, but like, that's it. Like, it happens that one time. If you can fall in love with that process of how you got there, it's going to be more than just one time getting that PR. And I think that's the challenge of the instructor, is getting the kids to essentially buy in to that point of, I know it's going to be a long road. I know it's going to take, you know, 8 hours versus, you know, 1 minute in the microwave, but that 8 hours of getting me ready and prepared for it is going to help me out a lot more down the road than if I just go to the microwave, throw in a couple of noodles, bada bing, bada boom from there.
Look, can you read that?
Look at that.
Yeah. It's like people expect it's just like, it's this. No, man. Like, it's, you gotta, like you said, it's like they think it's just like, oh, I'm going to PR every fucking week. Like, no, you're not. It might be like 4 months before you PR again, man. Like, it, and especially like the more higher up you go, like it's, you know, I kind of look at it like on a pitching side, like going 80 to 90, is way fucking easier than going like 90 to 95. And then going 90 to 95 is way easier than going fucking 95 to 98. Cause it's fucking double the amount of work for like less and less of a gain. You know, and that's why it's so fucking hard. Cause you keep getting up there. You got to work fucking twice, three times as hard to get like very diminishing returns. Right. And like you said, the microwaving success, like they want that quick hit. And that's just not how it works.
It's not, man. And actually, like, bringing that up today, literally I went through and talked to a kid about that. So this is his exit velo, this is right here, his max. Right here is his average. And then just showing him and walking him through, like, what this looks like. Like, it's one of those where until I showed him his progression, I don't think he really, like, truly understood what it looks like. And this is dude that went from 82 exit velo in January to now he hit 97 last week. So it's like, all right, dude's gone up 15 miles an hour in his max. That is awesome, but how does it look like how we got there? And just being able to trust, like, there's going to be those highs and lows, or there's going to be those plateaus. Like, right here, we hit a major plateau. We hit a spike, came back down. We went up just a little bit, back down. And this is where he hit his 97. This is where it just started kind of clicking and stuff like that. And they really don't understand that aspect or that piece. One, I think it's also tied into the fact that when we're looking at it, and this is something that kind of took me for a ride a little bit, is that the amount of time, like 1 month to us doesn't feel like it's a lot shorter than 1 month to them in their lifetime, right? So like for us, 1 year, let's say like, you know, a 10-year span for us is, you know, a little less than half of our life, or a 10-year span for them is most of their life. And so it's like getting them to understand the longevity or the length of what training is, and to be able to buy into that long term, it's tough for them because like they're not used to it. Like, think about it. They go to school, they go to middle school for 3 years, then they change, then they go to high school for 4 years, then they change. Like, they're always like small, quick little spurts, where for us, like, I mean, I haven't been in school in like 4 or 5 years. And so like it's different, you know what I'm saying? And I think it's can be difficult for them to actually grasp the true understanding of that.
Yeah. Which is why I liked how you started all the way at the top, Burns, of just like, okay, let's not like try and play college ball. Let's start all the way up here, because like it gives you that idea of like the length of time that it's going to take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a Maori quote. It's like the indigenous group in New Zealand. It's like, you want to aim for the clouds and land on mountains. So like, you know, yeah, let's fucking try for that. Like, out of the guys I have this year, are any of them actually going to play MLB? Like, are they going to make it? Like, the odds are very, very stacked against them. But aim for that. And like, man, if you know, if you go and you have a great college career, that's fucking sweet. That's awesome. Right. But yeah, you got to have those. Yeah. You got to have those big, big goals. Cause you know, I always tell them too, like, you guys are in the prime right now. Like, this is where your goals are fun. You know what I mean? Like there's nothing. Could you guys imagine going back to being 15, 16 and going back and just be like, fuck man, like just going, being in high school and working on baseball every day, man. Like Jesus. Like they don't.
The biggest stress is a biology test. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, man, they're in the best time of their life right now where it's like, fuck, the hardest thing they're doing is like a workout and like hitting. And it's like, man, that's just the funnest thing ever. Like going to get something like that and getting after it. Like they're in the best kind of time of their life right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wisdom is wasted on the old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to pull up Eminem had a quote very similar. And I'm actually trying to pull it up.
Like the chocolate company?
Eminem? Yeah. Fun fact of the day, M&Ms were created by the military so that way they can send chocolate overseas to people that were deployed.
Wow, that is a fun fact.
The hard outside shell doesn't allow for the chocolate to melt.
Nice. Learned something new today. Can cross that off.
Learn something new every day. Yeah.
Essentially, it was Eminem said, shoot for the stars. Just in case you don't make it, you'll land on the moon. Essentially, mm-hmm. It was something like that.
Same. Pretty much like same idea right there.
I like that, man. Yep. I like that. Mm-hmm. JP, you got a rabbit hole that we can go down?
That I do. And this is a rabbit hole without a bottom quite yet, but we're working on it. Let me share my screen.
Good to go, sir.
Got it.
Good to go. All right. So we are going to talk about free moment and not whether you have a free moment or whether you're busy, but whether we're creating free moment. What is free moment and why do I think we should care? Not too many. Okay. So this is the definition of a free moment. It's essentially the twisting force that is created when something torques, right? So when we think about hitting, the easiest place to think about free moments is in the ground. So when your foot's flat on the ground and you go to twist your foot, but your foot doesn't move, doesn't slide or anything like that, you're creating some force to the ground that's causing some torque there. And there's a lot of complicated words in this definition, things like moment, force coupling, center of pressure. So let's go through these one by one. So center of pressure is essentially the point at which you are pushing into the ground. So you can imagine if you're standing flat footed, that center of pressure would be kind of through the middle of your foot. If you rock back onto your heels without taking your foot off the ground, now that center of pressure is now shifted to your heel. If you do the same thing in your toes, that center of pressure is going to shift. So the easiest way I can kind of think about it is if I was standing on one leg and kind of keeping my balance, that center of pressure of my foot's going to shift around a little bit as I try and keep my balance. You can see on that graph that center of pressure kind of moving around a little bit there. A moment, right? We're talking about free moments. So what is a moment? It is the measure of a force's tendency to cause something to rotate. So we think about moment of inertia when we talk about weight distribution in a bat. A bat that is more barrel loaded is going to have a lower moment of inertia. So it's got a lower tendency to want to rotate. Higher handle loaded bat is going to have a higher free moment, higher tendency to want to rotate. Same thing when we talk about free moment force. It's how much force is wanting that object to now rotate. So when we go through free moment, there's a lot of forces acting in the ground, right? When we have our foot flat on the ground and I shift that center of pressure into my heel, my foot is still putting force into the ground in my toes, And I'm essentially putting force everywhere on my foot. Wherever I'm making contact with the ground, I'm pushing into the ground at some amount. So a force couple is taking all of those forces and putting them together, and the couple of that force is causing some rotation without translation. So we're not moving side to side, up and down, just rotating. So when we think about hitting, we think about that foot flat on the ground, putting force into the ground all over my foot, but we're taking the kind of total sum of those forces and looking at how those forces are interacting to cause that twisting motion without your foot moving around at all. So who the hell cares, right? Some weird force thing, like who cares? Well, when we talk about generating speed, whether it's bat speed, throwing velocity, like that, we need to create force, right? Force is going to help us accelerate the bat. And so somehow we need to create this force. And a lot of the times when we talk about force in hitting, we're looking at something like isometric mid-thigh pull, where we're pushing into the ground, right? We're pushing vertically into the ground, or maybe pushing at an angle, but we're thinking about how much force we're pushing into the ground. Problem is, that's not the only way the body can generate force, right? We have the stretch shortening cycle in our muscles, so I can generate force just by twisting. I'm not using the ground at all. I can kind of stand in a chair and twist. And so the tension created and then the release of that tension is also going to create force. So when we think about how force is generated when we hit, we have to kind of somehow reconcile these two points, right? There's some ground force that's helping, and there's also some of this like tension force that's helping, which is something that 108 loves to talk about, the tension force and kind of the fascial lines and things like that. So there's something there. So how do we kind of get these two together? Matt Wass, who is one of our sports scientists, he did a lot of research into energy flow throughout the body. I'm going to pretend to talk about how he did that or what the science goes into that. But what he found was essentially that the ground force into the lead leg and the transfer of that force up the body does not explain all of the force generated through release. And so his point was that it's something that we've talked about for a long time on the pitching side, is that the lower body is more of like a stabilizer for the upper body to then accelerate. So it's kind of this combination of forces where ground force explains so much of the force production, and then we're going to have the tension and release force that's going to create that kind of extra little bit. And so when we think about hitting and pitching, but I'm a hitting guy, so hitting, how do we kind of get there? And I think the answer to a lot of our questions, especially when we talk about biomechanics and how do we measure this stuff and get real detailed in our definitions, I think a lot of it is like free moment, right? Because free moment is a force, kind of like ground force, that's not internal of the body. It's you can ask Wass, it's really hard to kind of calculate energy flow throughout the body. But it's a little bit easier when I have a force plate. I can just tell you what force you're putting into the ground or what force is coming out of your body. A little bit easier to measure that. So when we look at free moment, it's something that can kind of give us this measure of that rotational force. I won't bore you with the biomechanical jargon, but I did want to pull up a video so we could kind of start thinking about how free moment is generated in the swing and what are our peaks that happen during the swing and things like that. So, Connor, do you have the video? So we have Mike Trout here, who is a good example of what I would describe as creating your foot free moment during his stride phase. So if we back up the video to kind of the start, watch as he goes forward, you're going to see his back hip work into external rotation. So his kind of shin, holding his shin angle, right? His back hip's going to get into external rotation. As his center of mass shifts towards the pitcher, his foot is going to twist where his toes are going to want to point towards the catcher, right? To kind of hold that stability. So as he's creating, let me see which direction this is He's creating clockwise free moment force. So his foot is wanting to twist towards the catcher. So the toes are going to want to twist towards the catcher. So he's creating some tension, some twisting motion, some torque as he's going forward. And then when he releases that force, right, his foot starts to rotate, the pelvis starts to rotate. In his front leg, as he starts to brace all of that rotational energy, he's going to create counterclockwise free moment force in his front leg. And as he does this, that's tension going the opposite direction in his front leg is going to help his body decelerate and help the segments up the chain decelerate, right? We have twisting force going clockwise. And then when he lands and starts to rotate, now his force is going to go the other direction. And so that's going to help him kind of brace or slow down through the swing. There's a couple different ways guys do this. And like I said, this is not, hey, we're going to get to the bottom of the rabbit hole today, because I think like an absolute metric ton of data science needs to go into this before I could say anything definitively. But is that guys kind of create it two different ways. Either you have a Mike Trout kind of guy where he's going to create a lot of his free moment force during his stride phase. He's going to go forward, and that's what's going to create that rear leg free moment. It's what I would describe as him like holding his back hip, right? There's guys that do it the opposite way. When you think of Paul Goldschmidt or you think of Aaron Judge, they're going to create a ton of free moment by coiling their hips early on. And what they're going to try and do is hold that free moment as long as they can because they're creating it by twisting their body on their back leg. They're going to have to hold it as long as they can, because the second they get too far forward, that's going to release because their hip's going to start working into posterior tilt. We're going to lose hip flexion. We're going to lose that external rotation or rear hip. And so now everything starts to unwind. So I think there's kind of two buckets of guys. Where some guys kind of create it during a stride, some guys create it during their load phase. But I think it's really important to think about the twisting force and not just the vertical force or kind of ground forces we're pushing into the ground. Because at the end of the day, like hitting requires the body to rotate. So if you can jump really high and you can push a ton of force into the ground, that's only as useful as you can turn it into rotational energy. I think free moment is a good kind of middle ground between the two to start kind of looking into and thinking about and something that I've really pushed our data scientists to kind of get on.
Damn, boy.
Yeah.
Well done.
There's the free moment. There's the free moment.
Went down a good amount of the rabbit hole. The fact that we're not at the other side. Makes me very excited for future down the rabbit holes with Mr. JP Fishon.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I don't think we have answers now, but kind of like the aliens guy, I think it could be a good place to start.
Hell yeah. Burns, you got anything on any of that?
No, I like being on this because JP's way smarter than me, and he makes me think about things and makes me feel like, holy shit, I need to do some more work here. But I'm happy I'm at least at a point where I'm like, I'm listening to you and I'm like, I'm half understanding you, so that's good.
I think it's one of those things where like once you kind of start looking at it and thinking about it, it's really hard not to see.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a good thing and that means that this is a good idea or that this is a bad idea. One of my favorite comics in the Capture Lab, it's these two guys, and one guy walks up and he's like, hey, I have an idea. And the guy goes, this is a good idea? And the guy responds, it's too early to tell. And that's kind of how I feel about this free moment stuff. I'm like, I don't know if this is a good idea, but it's definitely an idea.
Hey. No, it's good though. That's that's what science and experimenting is. Like you got to find out if it is or not, you know? And even if it is, bad idea, then it's like, okay, well now I know, you know? So, yeah. No, it's good.
You never know until you know, baby.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
One question I have for you on that is the like bat foot going towards the catcher, those like toes going towards that catcher, right? Is that something to where, and this might be a player to player kind of deal. Is that something where it's more of the thought or idea of turning the foot towards the catcher? Or is that more of an idea turning your rear leg towards the catcher without allowing the back foot to move? Like, how is that? Have you kind of like translated that to some players? Like, what has been kind of that external cue that you've used for some of those guys to kind of help out with that?
So this is where we kind of get a little into the gray area because, but just because you put free moment force into the ground, doesn't necessarily mean your hips doing anything. Right. And at the end of the day, like what we really want to get loaded is like the back hip. We want to get like into our glute, stretch our hamstring. Like that's what we want to do. But the cue I've used to try and describe this, to athletes, especially guys that just like jump forward. Right, like the second you get extended in your back leg, you're going to lose that twisting force. You're just not going to have as much contact there. So the way I've tried to describe it for guys is like I want you to try and twist the mat, the hitting mat, back towards the catcher. I want you to like feel like you're twisting the mat back towards the catcher when you go forward. So instead of kind of jumping out, I can't twist the mat anymore. I want you to feel like you're twisting everything. And I think that's kind of helped. I think talking about free moment is really difficult for athletes because it's really difficult for me to talk about. And so I think that the best thing I've found is more talking about, like, can you control when you start to go forward? You can't. You're losing the back hip. We're getting out of our hinge. We're not loaded, whatever you want to call it. That's kind of what we're trying to describe. And this isn't necessarily like a groundbreaking thing. But
or
I think
maybe
the goal
you are
of it is
trying to break the ground.
Maybe it is. Yeah. But I think the goal of it is to try and measure something that every coach talks about, and describes without really being able to tell exactly what it is.
Yeah. That's interesting. Cause you explain that, it's like I've been kind of teaching that but not really actually I guess knowing what that is. But it's like I always tell like my guys, like their back foot, like imagine, it's just like simple, it's like imagine your back foot glued to the ground and you're trying to point your toe like you said, like the other way, and it kind of causes that knee to start going on the outside a little bit. And yeah, no, or I tell them like think your back foot's glued in the ground and like you want to get your like back pocket kind of to the pitcher a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Same idea of like, hey, just like show your back pocket to the pitcher, like hold the coil back here.
Yeah.
Type of thing. Yeah. Same idea. Sure. Another one I've used before is like, try and feel like your knee stays over your ankle, kind of like vertical shin angle. That was a big trend for pitchers for a long time. I think that's trying to describe kind of that same idea.
Mm-hmm. One little tool that I use regularly all the time is actually those little mats that you put underneath furniture that you use to help kind of slide furniture on carpet. And so I've taken guys to where will put that on their back foot. And for the first like 5 or 10 won't even actually swing. But the entire time their goal is to try and, because it's on that little thing, it slides really easy. Mm-hmm. I let them like, all right, as you're striding, we're going to look to point that as far as we can and then allow them to kind of get used to that movement. And then it's like, all right, we take away the little sliding piece, same feeling though. And then with them actually keeping their foot in the ground, that actually stays. And one other thing that we do, part of our warm-up, is we call them knee turns. And so guys will essentially get into like a, what I call post stride. So they've done their stride, like a half squat, like whatever you want to call it in that position. And we'll keep the feet in the same spot, but then try and, one leg at a time. If I'm a righty, I'll take my left knee and I'll try and go from my left knee pointing at what would be like the first base dugout, keeping my foot in the same spot, keeping my hips in the same spot, keeping my shoulders in the same spot. We try and essentially we'll like move that knee as far as we can to the pitcher. But then on the other side, we do the same thing with the rear leg as well. So that way they start kind of getting used to that feeling of getting that like little coil piece. And then I've noticed, and it wasn't initial like purpose, but I found out really quickly that guys that are able to do it and the guys aren't, just based on their normal swing, guys that were able to get into their back leg, we do this thing, I call it PVC, speed swings, so many variations to it, but, take like a 5 foot PVC, swing as fast as you can forward, swing as fast as you can back. Just by watching and observing athletes, I noticed the guys that were able to naturally, or not naturally, but if it's been something we've worked on or whatever, the guys that already get a really good coil on their rear leg, what they would do is when they would finish their swing, they would know that, all right, I got to, as quickly as possible, get back to that like starting stride position. They would use their hips to initiate that first movement. And what that would do is the hips would start to close. That would allow the upper half to start to kind of wrap. But what then would happen, the momentum of the upper half would then continue. And if they weren't initially, like, I guess, getting right away to it, they would then automatically coil, load that back leg. And then their second swing, since they're already in like an extreme coil position, they're going to be able to go faster. And then essentially we would do seven swings in a row where it's boom, 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 boom. The second's better than the first. The third's better than the second. The fourth's better than the third. But then when I've had athletes that haven't, that don't normally do that in their swing, they would use their arms to try and come back around. And essentially what would happen is, instead, if this is like the starting position that we have, the guys that were doing a really good job with their lower half, they would get back to this position and then go into the next swing, where the guys that were using their upper half, because they weren't used to getting that feeling of the load, they would essentially get back to this spot. So then instead of it being a full swing from here, we're only getting here. So then that third swing, we're going from here. Then the fourth swing, we're essentially trying to swing starting here. And so that's been one drill where I kind of noticed, or it wasn't the initial intention, but I was like, oh, that is kind of a thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Do you have them keep their feet flat on the ground, or you let them kind of move it around?
Swing it. Like full stride. I can't remember the exact terminology that you used. I call it a weightless back foot. So when we do get to that point where that back foot starts to pick up, when we get that weight transfer, I call it weightless because like there's no weight on it, but it's still there. And then that's where we'll get that turn. So still allow for that natural, like everything is normal. But right when I finish that first swing, my initial, we're going to do a little Shakira action. My initial, so I'll go through swing, but then my first motion needs to be there. So that way, here, and now I'm already essentially coil loaded, whatever you want to call it.
Ready to go. Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, maybe I'll do another one, but like the force vectors, like pushing into the ground, like you said, like once you get to that finish position, how do you get your body back? Like starting with the hips makes a lot of sense, because now that front leg force vector, like you have to push into the ground away from your body to get everything now to move the opposite direction. So now those force vectors are going to do this guy to make that body rotate.
What I've noticed too is for guys that either A, they struggle maintaining posture or whatever it is, a lot of the time what I've seen is guys that, you know, if we're talking in a sense of margin of error, your body has a natural amount of like margin of error that it doesn't necessarily notice when stuff's going awry. So I'll use it as like, if a hitter is standing up or losing their hinge or whatever you want to call it, 1 inch every time they swing, they may not necessarily feel that because they're just so used to that. But if they look to continue, and this is why we do the seven swings continuously, once you get done with one swing, now I'm off by 1 inch. Now I'll come back and I'll start my second swing. Well, now I'm off by 2 inches from what I'm used to. Now I'm starting to break and get out of that margin of error spot where now I'm starting to notice. So if on the first swing I'm here, second swing I'm here, third swing I'm here, fourth I'm here, now I'm falling, I'm flaring, I'm getting everywhere. And then that's when it's kind of like, boom, right there. If we can make it to where it is a stride, plant, rotation around the spine, rotation back around the spine, stride, plant. If we can keep that same swing consistently, the seventh will look like the first. But if we have anywhere where it's starting to get awry, the first is going to look completely different than that seventh. I talk a little bit where it's like compound interest. The more that you do it, the bigger it gets. That's when it starts to become what I've found more noticeable for those athletes who aren't necessarily able to pick that up or get used to that feeling right away.
Yeah, it's interesting. I have to try that one.
You know what also is interesting as well? Digesting
what's
the beef.
What's that?
Digesting the beef. We got digesting the beef, boys.
Segment.
The past this weekend, I got into a little scuffle bug with a gentleman that I can no longer communicate with due to the fact that there's this block button, and I was blocked. I think it's like one of like two or three accounts, I think, in my Twitter lifetime that I've been banned from. So that was interesting, but I think it was all in good reason, good fun. So I'll pull this bad boy up. Unfortunately, due to me being blocked, I was not able to screenshot everything, but I did get, I think like 80% of the tweets. I just now realized that my mentions do not contain the tweets anymore, where yesterday they did. So I thought I was going to be able to just pull up my mentions, go through it. Not the case, but like I said, I got screenshots. Always take screenshots, kids. So let me zoom in a little bit. Oh, wait, LOL, JK, LMFAO. All right, share screen. Boom, go live. All righty, here we are. So this is a gentleman by the name of Greg Jacobs. He is Hitting Guru 7 on Twitter for anyone that would like to give the man a little view. But the first initial tweet of kind of like what got everything started off was, let's see here, this gentleman right here. And I lost my view. There we go. This gentleman right here, Caden Barnhart, is a community college player. So looking to transfer, right? Puts out a video of him throwing 94. Now, when you guys think of guys showing video of them throwing and them throwing hard, the JP, when going through and looking at some guys' post stuff, or Burnsy, when you guys go through and you guys post stuff, generally when you get trolls in your comments, what's generally the comment that you guys will see when you got a guy throwing really hard off of a mound in a video? Generally, what do you guys see as a comment?
Can he throw up for a strike, though?
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, can he come? That's not going to play in a game.
This gentleman actually threw the ball so well, we got the complaint of, answer me this, is it better to throw 94 dick high down the shitter or hit spots at 90 with run and sink on the back on the black down in or down and away? So we actually went the exact opposite. Apparently it was too good of a pitch. Too good of a pitch, ladies and gentlemen. And so keep in mind, this is also a former major league player. If you were to look in his bio, obviously that's why he is a Hitting Guru 7. He is a former major league player. So for me, to have a former major league player essentially being kind of a piece of shit, it was kind of cool to go back and forth with him a little bit. Let's see here. Ba, 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 ba. Let's see. Let's see. All right. So this is the piece. I don't have these first initial back and forth to lead into this conversation, but essentially what I said was, what did I say? What did I say? Essentially the conversation was me saying like, oh, that's what happened. So he commented and was like, that's not this isn't what Greg Maddux like wants or thinks is best, right? And he's like, Greg Maddux says, you know, the hit spots, do this, do that. My reply was, well, there's a reason there was only one Greg Maddux. Like, we only ever hear of one Greg Maddux, but there are hundreds of dudes in the big leagues that throw over fucking like 95, right? So it's like, okay, do you want to be the one person out of fucking like how many people have been on this world? Like 10 billion people? Like, do you want to be one of 10 billion or do you want to be 100 of 10 billion? Like, what seemed might be a little bit easier? Now, avoiding that, his comeback was, well, you know, if you actually were able to talk to high-level pitchers and stuff like that, you would know that they don't always try and throw as hard as they can all the time. I came back with saying, well, sir, when the average MLB pitch misses about 10-plus inches on every single throw, like, very difficult to essentially just dial in on the command side when the velo is going to help out. You know, like, guys are able to miss and still be successful. Walks are going down, strikeouts are going up. We can talk about why strikeouts are going up. I've got a full little demo that I'd love to show one day on why that is. But essentially, like, you have guys that are missing their spots more than ever, yet still being able to be successful, and it's strictly because of velo, strictly because of movement. Like, it is strictly because guys are throwing with high intent, they're throwing it hard, shit is moving like a blitz ball. And that is why guys are being successful. His response was, 10 inches, where did you pull that out of besides your ass? Get the fuck out of here. Go blow you smoke up someone else's ass. I'm watertight. You're more like certified clueless than anything else. Stay behind that desk that you have in your profile picture. That's where you belong, pushing paper. So my response was, I sent him the link. I can't remember his name. JP, you'll know, your guys' director of pitching at Driveline, Kayla.
Chris Langan.
Was it?
Chris Langan.
Boom. So back in February of this year, I remember that he put out a tweet that had all the stats on the average miss and everything. So I went through, boom, I put that in there for him. To where he'd be able to actually see it. Essentially, I said, like, you know, I'm going to keep paper pushing if that's what you think I'm doing. But the game is very scientifically based. And I said that I am sorry that you do not know as much of the game as you think you do. And that, you know, the game has learned so much more about itself now than when you were going through and playing. His response was, you send me stats from a director pitching for who? Listen, asshole, there is no shit to... Oh, also I said, you are the former professional who is shit-talking an amateur. That was essentially the whole reason of this. I absolutely hate when, you know, big leaguers, the people that we, like, grew up watching on TV are just absolute pieces of shit. I don't like it too much. This dude, in my mind, piece of shit. All right, moving on. So he said, listen, asshole, there was no shit talking to an amateur. I made a comment that velo isn't everything, location is. So you're saying that the game is better today. Keep impressing me with your certified bullshit. This is not the first run-in that I've had with this gentleman. There was last week or so, there was a school, I think it was like Mississippi State or Texas A&M, something like that. They put out a tweet where then the pitcher like struck out a dude, started like walking towards the dugout, like flex and talking shit or whatever. Like NCAA baseball or somebody put it out saying like, this is awesome, we need more of this, blah, blah, blah. And he started just doing it, blah, 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 like talking all the shit. Like, so if you guys remember, there was a newspaper article that The Simpsons put out where it was the old man yelling at the clouds. I just sent him that gif. And, like, that was it. And he was like, okay, Mr. Certified. So for the last week, I've been Mr. Certified to him. So that's where we get all the certification talk. I essentially just came back, like, the game is growing. The game is always going to get keep understanding itself. I did not say the game was better. That was a big thing. I did not say the game was better. I said the game is understanding itself. And that's strictly from the scientific like aspect that we've gotten. I talked about how Driveline is literally the biggest research and development institution for baseball and all aspects of baseball. Like, yes, there is like Florida Baseball Ranch, Texas Baseball Ranch, blah, blah, blah. They don't work on the hitting side. Yes, there's 108 Performance. Yes, there are. I'm not going to name the other one in Las Vegas. I don't like them too much. But there are lots of other places that essentially will go through and work on the hitting side. In my opinion, Drymalin is the only one that has actually been able to attack both ends and do it at a level of which being unbiased, right? So the amount of times that I've seen you guys put out something where it's like, this is not what we were initially expecting to, you know, get result-wise, but, you know, here are the results. I feel like there are a lot of other places that will pick and choose kind of how they go about certain things. So to me, Drymalin, gospel, you know what I'm saying? Like it is, you know, the Bible. It is the thing to kind of go off of. So for me, that's a big deal. So going through, let's see here. Where is it? Do I have the next ones?
I just went on his Twitter and literally read this whole thing. So
yeah, it's painful. So then that's when essentially I said, you know, like science is very important, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, if you don't agree with science, then essentially you're saying like, I asked him, have you been to space? Like, have you like done these things? Otherwise, if you haven't been to space, how would you know that the world isn't flat? Like, how would you know like all of these things outside of science? Science is what we did. Because before we had science, everyone thought that the earth was flat and the sun revolved around us, the whole entire solar system. And anybody that thought anything different was just killed. Like, you are obviously not smart enough. Obviously, you don't buy into the religion, or obviously, you don't buy into the. They just killed them, right? Where we're at a point now where that's not necessarily the case. His response came back to me was, morons thought the world was flat. And I was like, well, you know, technically, like, only people that today think that's the case, but people back in the day didn't know that. So, like, here's the thing. Like, science is very important. He decided to round it out with saying, yeah, Democrats have been saying that for the past 2 years. Trust the science. Where has that gotten them? You must be one of them. Right after he posted that, I tried inviting him onto my, actually, our podcast here to talk about everything, and then that's how I found out I was blocked. So, rounding out this long digesting the beef, rounding it all out. Essentially, what happened, you have a piece of shit ex, you know, big leaguer that thinks because they are a big leaguer that they are, you know, the truth, essentially talking shit to an amateur. Now, whether he actually right away went up and talked shit about, like, to, you know, Caden, I don't think that was the case. Where he didn't straight out and say it, but it's one of those where it's like, you're completely discrediting this dude. Like, obviously there's a reason this kid's posting 94. Obviously there's a reason that this kid is hype about it. Like, it's not like you don't post like your 80 mile an hour if you're able to hit 94. Just because, like, one, it's not that cool. Two, it's not going to get you recruited. Three, you want to be able to show like your successes. You want to be able to, like, we just went through and talked about a long thing of how difficult it is to get over like plateaus, how difficult it is to be able to train for a long period of time, still be dedicated, still have the motivation. I'm assuming 94 has been something that he's probably been trying to reach for a long time. And to essentially go in and just be like, well, imagine if you could throw 90 with sink on the corners, how much better that would be. It's like, dude, fuck off. Like to me, that is the most annoying shit in the world. Honestly, I could care less that he keeps calling me Mr. Certified. Sorry, dude. Like, you go fucking try it out. I don't know, probably won't be able to do it. Like, little things like that don't bother me, but when it comes to you actually attacking the person that is trying to get better in the space that you want to consider yourself a guru in, like, fuck off, dude. Like, fuck you. Yeah. Digesting the beef.
Yeah, no, that's that's some beef there. I think when you talk to a lot of guys that have been in the game at a high level for a long time, I think they forget. It's easy to forget what a high school kid does. It's easy to forget what a college dude does. So the selection bias of like, oh, big leaguers don't throw as hard as they can all the time. Like, yeah, but like them not trying to throw hard is still like 95. Like, that's that dude's like pull down. That's that dude's like giving everything he got.
It's like, also their perceived exertion too, like, yeah.
Exactly. And it's the same idea of like, well, like if you threw 90 with some run on the corners, like that'd be better than 94 down the middle. It's like, yeah, if I could throw 90 with sink, like I would, but like obviously I can't. And like, even if I could, wouldn't 94 with some sync be better? Like, wouldn't that play better too? So I think most of the time when you talk to like dudes that have just been in the game at the highest level for a long time, the selection bias is so real, and it's so hard to talk them out of it.
Dude, it's not a fucking Call of Duty game where you can go through and change your attachments just like lickety split and just be like,
yeah, be like, oh, I'm attaching sync to my fastball.
And that was actually one of the things that got lost in there, is I was like, just because you're not throwing at a high intent doesn't mean you automatically unlock movement, like movement and location. Like that doesn't like location. It doesn't just automatically go boom. Oh, now I can control everything. Like, I don't know. It's not that like, and I think. Trevor Bauer and Eric Sim have actually shown that pretty well. They do a thing called the 69 challenge where they'll go through and they'll just try and throw like pull downs at 69 miles an hour. It can take them a long time to do that. Why is that, dude? You're throwing it slower. You should be easier. I don't know, dude. It's so frustrating to like when that's the growth space, or like, I don't know. I view Twitter for those kind of athletes. I feel like that should be a safe space for them. Like, you should not feel like you're getting attacked by gurus. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's a Call of Duty lobby.
Twitter is a fucking war zone, so it doesn't even matter at this point. War zone. You can't post anything. You can't.
And I'm all for it.
Honestly, fuck that guy's PR. 94, it's bullshit. Like, who cares, right?
Not even good, dude. Not even fucking good. Too.
I sat like 78 to 81 in college. Like, fuck that.
Exactly. Into a big leaguer, like, you know, like, whatever. Like, it, you know, I got a bunch of dudes. Like, I've faced a bunch of dudes that throw 94. Like, they throw it down the middle and I crush it. It's like, well, yeah. But this dude is some JUCO throwing 94 down the dig. He's going to get a lot of swings and misses. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, man, and it's like, well, the harder you throw, the less you have to fucking worry about command. That's a fucking plus. You can, like, Christ, I remember watching the Mariners and Blue Jays series, and, like, the Mariners were just rolling out guys throwing, like, 103, and I was like, what the fuck is going on right now? Exactly. And it's, like, just dick shots with, like, this, so it's like, I don't know, man, it's just... One, Reynolds, so much less toxic than last week, so I apologize. it was a good step forward.
Well, wait till next week's.
But, yeah, man, I don't know. It's just like, these guys are just losers. Like, oh, God, I saw another Jeff Fry tweet this week. He just
blocked him.
He quote tweeted something. I have him on mute, but, like, every now and then I'll just, like, pop on and see what he's doing.
Checking all the tweeted Jeffrey.
He tweeted this thing. I can't remember what he quote tweeted, but he was like, I didn't take one baseball lesson. It was a 13-year big leaguer. And he was like, I haven't had one golf lesson. I'm a four handicap. And I was like, thick, man. Like, good for you. Like, fucking
an athlete.
Nice, dude. Good job. Really good job.
I didn't take one lesson either. I got cut.
Yeah, man. I haven't taken a golf lesson. I'm a fucking 18 handicap. I need golf lessons. And like, Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Dude, ex-big leaguers can be like the like goats or the woats really fucking quickly. Really quickly. Well, boys, you guys got any closing arguments? Anything you want to bring up?
We were talking before, but I got the Smash Factor balls this
group.
So that's been fun to play around with. I also pre-ordered Hacking the Kinetic Chain from Jason Ochart, so I'm pretty fired up for that one as well.
Got some good. I put some good programming in there.
Good. I'm fired up.
Back in the day,
little fucking flex there, JP. Whoa, fuck, dude. He's like, yeah, go to page fucking 78 and fucking 84. I put some good shit in there.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna fucking memorize that. I'm gonna memorize.
You're gonna watch the drill videos and see this beautiful face.
Fuck yeah. But yeah, no, just it's been good stuff. The Smash Factor, I do have a question too. It's probably better to get it on like an elevated surface more, just because like the first time you did, I don't know. I get lazy sometimes. I try and put it on the mound, but sometimes I'm just like, ah, fuck, I don't want to bring the mound out. But yeah, just like anything up in the zone was just like, whoop.
Yeah, the best trick I've found is to drop the bottom wheel speed, like maybe, like when you get it to the point where it starts like diving, like turn it up like 2 clicks, and
Okay.
it's still flat, but it won't like on you.
Take off.
Yeah, 'cause I started off, I went like 6-6-10 on our hack, and it was just throwing like 106, and I was like, holy. I was like, okay, that looks really fast. I was like, someone grab a gun, and there was like 106. I was like, holy shit.
Oh, dang.
I was like, oh fuck, man.
Hey, at least you grabbed a gun the first time. I didn't do that. We just went through. I set up the machine and we were doing a bat speed program. So we were using like the axe trainers. So we had like green and red. And so I'm just using regular baseballs. And then when they went to the underload, I was like, all right, we're pulling out the smash factors. I just fucking fed that thing in. I'm like, what's wrong with you guys? It's the same speed. Like, come on. And then after is when I went and I looked at the hit tracks chart where it will track the speeds. I was like, why the hell did this jump in velo like crazy? Because if you look at the session review, it'll split it up by pitch speed. I was like, why are these it? And then I like went back and rewatched. I was like, oh, so I went to the guys. I was like, hey, guys, my bad on that.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's funny.
One big thing
Yeah.
that I've, little tip trick that I've noticed, one, be very, very cautious of using wood bats with cups on the end. Two, make sure all of your L screens and anything like that have like caps on them. Because of how like well guys are able to hit, generally I've noticed velos go from like 10 to 20 miles an hour increase on their exit velo. Those things get sliced real quick if they catch any kind of like hard metal surface. So I've had to go through and I've had to take duct tape and just like heavily cover every end cap. Every like little thing, like I said, I've had one guy that was swinging. He was like struggling with the like slight increase in velo on it, and he was using a wood bat. So I was like, "All right, dude, like try and yank this thing into the third base dugout. Like I want you." And so he did. Ended up catching it literally like right on the end of his bat and just sliced it. Now they're foam. They're like any other like. They're very similar in properties to a lot of other products like that. And so like they just get cut and slit open. So before you even like really start getting heavy into it, those would be the big things that I would say. And then I only use smash factors on the underload bats just because I've seen so many underloads just get blown up from using real baseballs. And so I don't know if you guys have the driveline underload or anything like that, I would strongly suggest solely moving to only using smash factors on the underloads. Eliminate all real baseballs on the underloads. I don't know. I don't have a driveline budget to where I can just, call up Axe and be like, hey, I need another underload. Like, I don't have the ability. I'm assuming you guys over at Absolute Human Performance with being like building one of the probably largest fucking, buildings in Canada for baseball. With that going up right now, you guys may not have the luxury of just ordering another underload.
We just had a big ass driveline order, so that's like we got the Smash Factor. I got
Shout out to
like,
Black Friday, baby!
yeah, and we got a bunch more mini hitting plyos. I think we got two more long bats, two more short bats. I think three more underloads, overloads, a
God
couple more systems.
damn, son!
Dude, Taylor, man.
You guys got a little driveline order? Fuck.
Yeah, I think it was like it was a good amount of money, but like yeah,
Yeah.
we got some of those pink throwing plyos as well. What else do we get? We got a lunch bunch of shit, so it was a good haul.
The pink throwing plyos are money. They're that perfect weight, like just a little bit heavier than the green ball, but like the
Not
black
a
ball,
black.
sometimes you pick it up. Yeah, like.
Oh, and man,
They'll pick it up.
random, super random. Like, just went back in my memory bank. I went to a Blue Jays game this summer, and I had the pleasure. It was Manoa versus Ohtani.
Oh, yeah.
Ended up being a 1-0 game, which like My girlfriend and her sister were with me, and they were like, they
bored
don't
out
really
of
know
their minds.
Baseball. And they were just like, the fuck is this? And I'm sitting there, I'm just like, this is fucking awesome.
This is amazing.
Like, I'm down the right field line, and like the Angels bullpen is in the right field bullpen or whatever, right? And holy shit, man. Watching, I got there like an hour-ish early. I just missed BP, but I saw Ohtani warm up. Holy fuck. One, the guy is a fucking mutant in real life. Like, he looks big in pictures, but like in real life, I'm like, oh my God. The ply routine that guy does is absolutely fucking insane. The guy is just whipping black fucking balls. I'm like, my God. I'm just looking at my arm would break if I did that. It was crazy too. Yeah. I hate bringing up the pitching stuff on this podcast, but like, man, it was just kind of cool seeing he had his translator just tracking his velo on every single plyo throw. Ohtani probably went like 120 maybe for his warm up, and then went on the mound. Meanwhile, you got Manoah on the other side. He's going pull to pull long toss. I don't know. It was fucking cool. That just reminded me of that. But yeah.
Ohtani's a freak, dude. He's so big,
dude,
and jacked.
Yes, he is.
Yeah. Enormous. That's fine. The only thing I got, it's holiday season, and any athletes listening, just because it's the holidays does not give you an excuse not to go throw. Be back in school in a little bit. You're going to need to practice every day. If you do not throw winter break, your arm will hurt.
And you're yeah. referring to like infielders, outfielders, and catchers, right?
Everyone. Yes.
Make sure that they're throwing, right?
Specifically position players, because I was that guy that was like, nah, we're fine.
My arm needs to rest.
The first 2 weeks of spring, I'm taking 8 ibuprofen to get through practice because my arm's falling off. Like, don't do that. Have a throwing routine on ramp into the season. Make sure your arm is healthy.
Because fuck your kidneys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Bad habits back in the day.
Now, real quick, I would like to do a little like cleanup for anybody listening. Yes, Burns was like, what did you say, 78 to 81 in college?
Yeah.
Change up. What was your change up, Elo?
Like, 70, 72.
Yeah, plus changeup. So I've hit off Burns. Yes, 78 to 81. Now that's 78 to 81. When you are when his main pitch is the changeup, feels like 88 to 91. When you're like sitting changeup or whatever it is, and all of a sudden the fastball comes, like. And that's one of those things where we can talk about the training aspect of it as well, and like the hitter perception, stuff like that. Like, for anyone listening, Burns, very effective pitcher in college, extremely effective pitcher in college. So I don't want anyone listening to be like, oh, he was only 70, 80. Whoa. Like, yes, with also plus changeup, like, dude's fucking legit. So
plus changeup, I probably threw 50% changeups, like, 25% sliders, and then like 20-ish% fastballs. I also
fork
only
balls
walked
for
seven,
the other mix in there.
I walked like 7 guys in 83 innings, and I gave up still like 110 hits. So I wouldn't recommend my path. It was, you know, gave up some big yaks on some changeups. So I'll tell you what.
I love it, boys. Well, for everybody listening, I appreciate it. Burnsy, where can the people find you?
On Instagram, Burns_19. Also follow, actually, my hitting. That's just my personal account. Don't follow that one. I don't think I posted in like a year, but I got at AHP hitting. That's my hitting one on Instagram. And then on Twitter, it's just at Burns A, Burns AAY. So.
We need to get you losers on the idea of having the same handle for all social medias. I will say it makes it a lot easier.
Dude, I made it when I was in like the 10th grade. So just relax.
It's almost like you can change your handle or something. It's like
settings.
I don't know. No. Elon's doing a good job. There, JP, where can the people find you, sir?
They can find me on Instagram at jp.fasone and on Twitter at JP Zone One.
For anyone else listening, you can guys can follow me at @_RBI. All platforms, wherever you want, anywhere. You don't have to remember different things. Just at @_RBI. So kind of easy, kind of easy. Thank you guys for tuning in. This was the 41st episode of the podcast. Look forward to seeing you guys next week.